Good day, everybody. Ryan here from the PE Umbrella Podcast. Now, before you get stuck into another episode of the show, I'm here to ask for 2 minutes of your time to visit the PE Umbrella supporters page over at patreon.com/thePEUmbrella. If you've ever gained any value from any of the episodes of the podcast, the interviews, the reflections, or the resources, I'd appreciate you just giving me 2 minutes of your time to check it out, see if anything there is worthwhile for you to continue supporting the show and push it forward in its growth to spread the positive message of physical education that we have here. That's over at patreon.com/thePEUmbrella. That's patreon.com/thePEUmbrella. For now, though, get that notepad and pen ready. Buckle yourself in for another episode of the PE Umbrella Podcast. The PE Umbrella, episode 159. Welcome to the PE Umbrella Podcast with Ryan Ellis. Join me as I dig deep into the world of PE, interviewing inspiring practitioners from around the world, share my own teaching reflections, and discuss some awesome resources that you can use in your classroom. So what are you waiting for? Come on over and join me under the PE Umbrella. Hello there, everybody, and welcome to the PE Umbrella Podcast. And as always, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. With me under the umbrella this week is PE teacher, once upon a PE lesson creator, and now two-time PE Umbrella guest, Rachel Ford. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks.
Fantastic. It's great to have you back again. Can you just remind me and the listeners where in the world you are at the minute, where it is you teach?
I am in China.
In China at the minute. So, and we'll get into a lot of interesting facts about where in the world we're teaching at the minute, due to the current pandemic and circumstances we've all been through in the past few months. Before we get into all of that and talking about PE today, could you just tell me and the listeners an interesting fact about yourself that a lot of us might not know? Anything?
I am very much a dog person. And when I'm not teaching, wherever it is I've been living, I've been taking stray dogs off the streets, trying to get them cleaned up, trying to get them fostered and adopted. So that's my very caring pastime.
Oh, I love it. What a beautiful thing to do and a wonderful thing to do. And are you caring for any dogs right now?
I have my own dog. And we just, a couple of weeks ago, got a dog adopted. So we're back down to one dog at the minute.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's wonderful. It's something I definitely didn't know, but what an amazing thing for you to be doing. Now, those who were thinking, yeah, Rachel's voice is familiar, she did indeed appear on a previous episode of the PE Umbrella. Lots of the regular show questions were on that episode. You can dip back in and you can listen to. But for those people who may have forgotten, who have not heard you speak before, can you give us an elevator pitch of maybe no more than a minute, Rachel, just to briefly tell us a little bit about your teaching background leading to where you are now?
Of course, yeah. Graduated from Sheffield Hallam. After graduating, went straight to Malaysia, taught in Malaysia for 4 years, and I'm now in China just finishing off my first year teaching here.
Fantastic. And do you have any plans in the pipeline anytime soon to come back to England?
In all honesty, no. I think I'm going to stay abroad teaching for a while and see where that takes me before I think about coming home.
And what would the reasonings behind that be? Would it be more lifestyle based? Are you happy with where you are? Or
yeah, I'm happy at the minute, and I love to travel. So if I can do a job I love and travel at the same time, you know, for me it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, and why not indeed? I have a lot of people listening be very jealous of the fact that you've had that opportunity and just to see a different perspective of the world, the world itself and an education, and more specifically for you with PE teaching as well. Now, speaking of PE, interesting climate, as we've already mentioned, as we're sat here recording this, but what currently excites you about the PE landscape in the world? What's exciting you right now?
I think it's how PE just is developing in so many different ways, and it's being more accepted. There's so much going on with, you know, we know that PE helps mental wellness and academics and all these extra little branches that come off of PE, but it's, I feel that it's being used a bit more and recognised a bit more rather than being used as a justification as to why students should do PE. I think a lot of people are really digging deep into the bigger benefits that PE can have and, yeah, just digging deeper into them and spreading the word a bit more.
Yeah, it's interesting that this whole pandemic itself, the COVID-19 pandemic, while it's meant PE can't be taught and isn't taught in its traditional sense in a setting that me and you and the listeners will probably be used to, what it has done, though, is it's almost shone the light onto physical education more than it would be if none of this had ever happened. I feel like there's been more activity on social media, more activity in the media as well. And I know over here, for example, Joe Wicks has gotten a lot of stick for what he's done. And I think it's more to do with the terminology and branding, but no one can argue how many people he's getting moving with some physical activity on a daily basis, which is truly remarkable. But one thing he does say, which I think is a great way for him to spin what he's doing, is he's always mentioning how his reasoning for exercising and for being physically active is how it contributes to his mental well-being. Is it makes him feel good, it makes him a happier, better person to be around, and it sets him up for the day. And I think ultimately, if I can get some children I teach physical education to, in its more traditional sense, thinking that way about movement as well, I think I've done a really good job there if students can see that as being a byproduct of exercising and physical activity.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to educate students to stay active throughout their lives, don't they? So yeah. If that's the main thing they take from PE, then it's a job well done,
yeah.
I think.
I think back to why I'm active now. I should really be more active, if I'm honest with you, but why do I choose to do things such as play football on a Wednesday night? Well, for me, it boils down to enjoyment. It's fun. Makes me smile. And you know what? On reflection, even though I might not acknowledge it at the time, it does make me feel better. When I exercise now at home, every other day I might do a little bit of bodyweight exercises. I'll be running around with my kids. On reflection, is mentally, it makes me feel better. And I think we need to fly that flag for our subject and being physically active. Those dopamine releases in our brain, it makes us feel better. Unless you've experienced that, it's hard to tell that to a 5-year-old, isn't it? That this is going to make you feel much happier, because yeah, they're happy all the time anyway. Everything is exciting to my 3-year-old daughter and my 6-year-old son. A cardboard box is amazing to them. But quite frankly, that's something we've got to hold on to and take with us through the rest of our lives as well. So that's what's exciting you at the minute, Rachel. Something we never talked about in our first episode were misconceptions about physical education, and more of the recent guests I've asked this to. And across the world, physical education, there are many misconceptions about what the subject is or what it does, or opinions about it. If you could wave a wand and get rid of one misconception about PE to change views on it for the better, what one would you get rid of?
Yeah, this kind of contradicts what I've just said, because I've talked about how kind of PE is being shone in a new light now. But I think there are a lot of adults who had a bad experience of PE when they were at school, and they hold on to that grudge and that bad experience. And don't get me wrong, you know, you listen to people's experiences of PE sometimes and you think, wow, that was a terrible PE teacher, should not have made you do that. And you disagree with everything they've done. But I do think some people who've had those bad experiences hold on to that and still have this horrible attitude towards PE, which what scares me is they will pass on to their kids or their grandkids, nieces, nephews, whoever, and influence how now the younger generation look at PE. So I'd really want people to, as much as PE teachers, we open our eyes to the damage that PE can do if it's done wrong. If somebody has had a bad experience, open their eyes to how much better it is getting and how much better educated PE teachers are to make their subjects so much more inclusive.
Yeah, that's a truly fascinating point. And what's amazing me as I'm sat here now is I was having similar thoughts this morning. I don't know why. I was eating my toast and I was thinking about this. And it really is interesting because these adults, these people in the world are letting an experience, which, you know, experiences can have major implications for us as people, but letting it define who they are and define them and not allowing themselves room to grow and see it as a moment they can learn from and change their opinions. And we should always be open to learning something new and changing ourselves. And what you've then just mentioned about how that's passed on to further generations and children, it shapes how children and kids view that subject based on their parents' experiences. And I've been trying to piece this all together. I did a podcast a few months ago about cognitive biases. And one of those cognitive biases was a confirmation bias, where we have pre-existing information and our brain, whether consciously or subconsciously, will seek out to verify that which it thinks it knows. So I'm trying to put this into a PE context. And you think of these adults who've had these negative experiences, they've let it define them and define how they view what physical education is. They're passing on to their children that PE was rubbish for them. It's a waste of time. Oh, you shouldn't like it. It's no good. It won't get you anywhere. These are then sentences and narratives of PE that children are coming into a school holding. And whether they want to or not, consciously or subconsciously, the confirmation bias dictates that they are going to try and find evidence of that in a PE lesson that's going to confirm what they've been told, confirm the narrative that PE is a bad thing. And it's a hard one to combat. I'm not sure how we go about that. So this child is then looking in their head in a PE lesson that you're teaching, that I'm teaching, for reason to verify what they've been told by their parents, that it's a bad experience, that it's rubbish. And sometimes it's hard to shield children from things that might go wrong in PE. Things might happen that they perceive as a negative. And we've got to educate children that that doesn't define you. It doesn't mean it's bad. It's a learning experience. And I think that's where sort of working alongside and educating parents more is really important too. And it's a hard one to combat, isn't it?
It is, massively. I mean, like I say, when you listen to some of these experiences, they were bad. But yeah, it is just a matter of being open-minded and trying to turn, like you say, trying to turn a bad experience into a positive. How do you get up from that? How do you improve? How do you change the situation you're in?
Yeah, there's no denying that a lot of parents have, some parents have had bad experiences of physical education, but I'd like to think they've got something about them where, again, they haven't let it define them, and their message to their children would be, yeah, my experience was negative, but it doesn't mean it will be the same for you. What defined me and what shaped me doesn't mean it has to be the same for you. And you know, today it's very different from when I was younger. So therefore, you know, just embrace it, go in with open arms and an open mind and see what works for you. That's what I'd like the conversations to be. My fear is that it's not always the case. And there are many children being shaped and their opinions being shaped from past experiences that we're trying to get rid of and eradicate.
Yeah, I'd agree 100% there.
It's a lot of food for thought there. And something, as I just said, Rachel, I've been dwelling a lot on recently about how the confirmation bias, not just in education, affects everybody daily. The way I likened it on my previous podcast was when you're working with a class of students that you've never met and somebody who does know them comes to you and says, yeah, they're a lovely group, but watch out for little Johnny and little Sally. You know, they might be a bit problematic. And whether I know it or not, I'm therefore programmed, my mind's programmed to find out reasons to verify that they are a problem. I'd rather not know sometimes. And it's a tricky one. We all can fall foul of it. But it just dawned on me this morning, which again, I'm glad it's why you raised it, is how that's impacting on children who have been fed that narrative of PE being a negative from their parents. Their brains are going to work in a way that will try and seek out the negative to confirm that belief as well. So fascinating stuff. Now, before or at the end of when we last chatted on the podcast, Rachel, and since then when we've been staying in touch, you were sort of in the midst of creating your own space for PE. You're very keen when it comes to the themed PE space, and you've created sort of a website, Once Upon a PE Lesson, sharing blogs, resources and ideas on there. Could you just tell myself and the listeners a little bit more about that? Because I think since we last spoke, it was in its very early stages. It might not have even been live at that point. But now it is. So can you just speak us through what it is and what your intentions are with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't live. It was actually our talk that made me think some more about it. Because when we last spoke, we talked about using stories within PE lessons for early years in Key Stage 1 PE. And I just kind of kept thinking about that after, because that has got to be the best piece of advice I was given when I knew I was going to teach early years PE. And I started to think about how I could make this story more than just a story to get me through a game. So I started talking to the classroom teachers for my kindergarten classes and asking them what stories they were looking at in class, if there was a message that they were trying to show through this story, and started tying in so that I was using the same story in my PE lessons as they were using in class. And that worked magic, because it just engaged students straight away. I have a grade one class who are my most difficult class to control behavior-wise. And once I started using stories with them and they were doing the same story in class, they just loved it, because they'd be telling me about the story. They'd be doing little actions of little dances they'd done in the classroom and all bits and bobs like that. So I saw even more of a link and thought, okay, fab, that's great. Tie in with what the teacher does in the classroom. And then I started to look a bit more at movement words. So what words could I really emphasize during my lesson? Twisting, running, jumping, exploding, all these words that as you say them, you kind of do an action. So then through hearing these words in a PE lesson and actually showing a movement for these words, students were starting to build up the words that they knew. Bearing in mind as well, my students are bilingual students, they were starting to build up their understanding of the English language. So that was the next step I went to. And then I'm now actually kind of molding a whole dance unit around the use of movement language and movement poems. And I'm working very closely with the class teacher. So she's actually doing poetry in class, which is perfect, because they can write a poem about the dance activities they'll be doing with me. And it just opened up a lot of communication between me and the classroom teachers to talk about how we could actually combine what I was doing in my PE lessons and what the students were doing in the classroom. Yeah. And it could work two ways. It could either be I would do something in PE that would give the students something to go back to the classroom and write about, or the students will have learned some vocabulary or some emotion words within the class, and they would then bring that to my PE lesson, and we'd use that language within a PE lesson and then experience that language through movements. So it started to tie really nicely together, but ultimately it's all about cross-curricular learning and using movement to really motivate the learning of language. And it's been working. It was working before schools broke up, and it's starting to work again really well. And classroom teachers love that. Students that do not usually like to sit down and write, as soon as you say, right, I want you to write about your PE lesson, I want you to write about what you did in your PE lesson, they'll sit down and they'll do it.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said there for that, though, in that it has meaning to them. They're writing about something they've done and experienced, and that can be a lot easier, a lot nicer. And, you know, I love the link that you have to vocabulary, and that's particularly powerful lower down school. You're talking about these youngsters in how words need to make meaning, particularly if you're bilingual students, but over here directional language in particular is huge, you know, what it actually means. And we all know the rabbit holes you can go down when, and I've shared my story of this many times, when words don't have meaning to children. They don't quite know what that instruction means, and things can fall apart. And using a movement way to demonstrate some of these languages, terminologies, on, under, over, through, around, zigzag. But I think emotion, and how you've explained how a dance unit to be certainly built around emotional words they may have used in the classroom, and tapping into that affective side of learning, then, you know, what it means to be truly sad or upset or happy, proud, delighted, and so forth, which students might not have always experienced. They might not be able to tap into that and understand when someone else is feeling that, and to portray that through movement, I think, is really powerful. And when you mentioned the storytelling earlier, and how that is something I fly the flag of all the time, particular theming lessons for Key Stage 1 and EYFS around a story, what for you has been your most successful story link or theme that you've enjoyed to do the most so far?
Jack and the Beanstalk is always a good one. I love Jack and the Beanstalk. There's so much you can work with on that. You can tailor the story to just work on so many different skills.
Okay, so if I probe further for someone who's listening then, Rachel, to you to think about that, yep, Jack and the Beanstalk lesson, can you give us an example of one activity or one part of that lesson and what the students are doing and how it links into the story itself?
Yeah, well, very, very basic one. I just did today, actually. Athletics for grade one, just looking at running fast and explosive power, and I'm sure everybody will have done this kind of relay race where you've got cones out and students have to run with a tennis ball and put it on top of the cone and run back, and then the next person goes, and it's a bit of a relay race warm-up activity. And again, this is a class that do not like listening to instructions. They do not like being sat and listening. And I just turned the tennis balls into magic beans. And you're taking them where you can plant the magic beans. And straight away, they knew they had to put a ball on top of a cone. And it actually tied in really nicely, because the lesson after that, they actually did plant some seeds. So me and the teacher had talked about that before. So it was such a simple little story. Obviously, you can go a lot more complex than that, but such a simple little story to just instruct the students on what they need to do, that then went into their next lesson. And they're like, oh, well, we were planting magic beans in PE. And then obviously the classroom teacher turned it into a real seed, and they actually did plant it, and then they'll look at what happens once you've planted the seed.
And I think what's really nice there is, you know, it's promoting great communication between you and the class teacher. If that's replicated somewhere else around the world and you're not communicating with a class teacher when you teach PE, you know, perhaps it's time to start doing that, to sort of have that meaning and continuous link. But certainly over here in the UK, and I know other places in the world do this, the class teacher is the one teaching PE. So you're the one who is able to know what the very clear links between your classroom learning are and how you could then implement that in PE with some creativity. And that's a great example there that you mentioned, where when they went back into class, they were actually planting these seeds and these beans as well, which makes some great meaning, doesn't it, for the students themselves and what it is that they're learning and what they're doing. Would you say that learning through a theme and giving a story behind it, that the greatest benefit is perhaps increased engagement, or is there other things that you've noticed since it's something you've really taken on board and done as well?
I would say the first thing you notice is engagement. For me, the first thing was definitely the engagement and how students could just reel off a story to me and then understand what I wanted them to do so much quicker and easier because I'd put it into a story. But also it is their spoken language as well. If you're repeating the same sorts of actions or emotions that is repeated in a story, I think students do start to understand what it means. For example, a theme that we were doing in the classroom, they were doing about friendship and being helpful towards your friends. So we played a very simple tag game, and if you were tagged, you became a frozen tree in the Forbidden Forest. And to be set free, somebody had to give you a high five to be set free. So we went off and did that, and then we kind of had a chat, and we talked about, well, how are you being a good friend in this game? And, you know, students started to pick up, oh, well, I save my friends so that they can play the game. And then you dig a bit deeper, what do you do to save your friends? I go and give my friend a high five so that they can play the game again. Okay, great. Why is that helpful? Because otherwise they won't be able to play. They can play now. And then you dig a bit deeper. What if your friend's been nice to you and given you a high five and set you free? What should you do if your friend does something nice for you? And then, you know, somebody says, oh, you should say thank you. So then you've got kids running around doing this, and every time they give a high five, they're saying thank you to each other. Then you go a bit further. What do you say if somebody says thank you to you? You're welcome. So you've got a tag game where there's lots of thank yous, lots of you're welcome, lots of talk about how if you're setting a friend free, you're not just thinking about yourself, you're thinking about your friend. So little lessons like that, when it just really strikes you so clearly during a lesson, and you can see that you're not just teaching them the physical, you're teaching them the idea of friendship, and the idea of helping each other. And if that goes through life with them, that's amazing, especially in early years in Key Stage 1 PE, where we sometimes keep things very individual because kids don't always get the idea of sharing and being helpful at such a young age, and you can kind of go to isolated skills and individual activities. Yeah, you do a game like this, and if later on in a game they're stealing a ball from each other or something, you can come back and say, well, you know, I thought you were friends. Is it a helpful or friendly thing to do if you take the ball away from your friend? What should you do instead to be a better friend? And it's, I think links like that are amazing.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way of putting it. And seeing a game like that, like a tag-type game, has been more than looking at the physical, as I would say, rather than looking through the lens of the blue umbrella at the agility and the dodging and changes of speed and direction that brings, putting my purple umbrella lens on and looking at the effective, even the red umbrella, social skills that come along with that, that will stay with them through life, which, you know, in a classroom, you might, when you're walking in a line out of the classroom, and how many people are saying thank you at the door. And I think social skills can often be left lost and just expected. We expect children to do it without being explicitly taught them and why they're doing them and why it's important. And I love the steps you took us through there in that particular game as, okay, so now somebody said thank you, then what? And then what? And why? And as an activity, embedding those throughout your school year, but I think really important towards the beginning of a school year. And I know you've just recently gone back after your 3 months with the COVID-19 stuff, embedding a culture and almost an expectation so that if situations arise, like you just mentioned, Rachel, conflict later on, you can go back and revisit what you'd already learned and discussed about how do we talk with each other in this group, and to use our manners and be respectful and our pleases and our thank yous and your welcomes, because that's what we expect of PE in this class and in our school, and building that in is incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do. It is funny how we kind of forget that we need to teach students how to have good manners and bits and bobs like that. You know, we wouldn't expect them to be able to go off and do a physical skill without looking at it in class. Yeah. Yet we're very quick to get annoyed with students if they're not respectful or polite. But they do need to be taught. It needs to be modelled. And it's just as important as the physical, in my opinion.
Yeah, and diving deeper into that, why sometimes, you know, somebody's held the door for you, well, you should say thank you. Well, why? And not just because it's the polite thing to do. Sometimes that's not enough of a reason for kids, just because it's a nice thing to do. Well, why is it a nice thing to do? Is it going to make them feel good about themselves? They're trying to help you out. They're doing a job, doing a favour for you. Like, you can go deeper and deeper. And I think the more we have these discussions, whether it be in PE and beyond, the better. The more learning, the more understanding the children will absorb. And as they grow older, we'll be able to draw upon these skills even more and better. Now, something I do want to, I'm really keen to dive into in today's chat with you, Rachel, is the fact that you've just recently gone back into teaching face-to-face after 3 months out. Distance learning's taken place. We've already mentioned briefly how there are many things going on in the world at the minute, from fitness, physical activity videos to more bespoke skill-based things. So Yorkshire Sport Foundation teaming up over here with AFP and so with the This Is PE campaign, with more bespoke skills for primary and secondary to try at home with everyday household objects like rolled up socks or plates or ties or whatever that may be. But there's now, as we're still not back teaching face to face, more of a worry, an anxiety and a wondering of what is PE, particularly being the very social active subject it is, going to look like once we return in whatever shape or form that looks like back into our schools over here. So first question for you, Rachel, is how have you found the first couple of weeks back and teaching face-to-face again after so long out?
It's been a weird one. Slight panic attack on the first day, thinking I'd forgotten how to teach. So it's been odd. Here, students were wearing face masks a lot, and it was really, really hot weather. So, you know, your common sense comes into play there that you can tell them they don't necessarily need to, because we are told if they're outside and it's well ventilated, all that kind of stuff, they don't need to wear the masks. But obviously you can't be banning masks from lessons if that's something that they and their parents see as necessary. So you do need to adapt your activities in terms of intensity. Also remembering that for some students, they won't have done much physical at home, which, you know, does not make sense to us because we do as much as we can. But as I was watching my students take part in their first few PE lessons, it was very obvious that they were just so tired so early on in a lesson. So again, that comes into thinking about intensity. A huge shock for me was how students, particularly primary, had lost so much structure. Once we found out we were going back to school, I had these big ideas of athletics units and mini Olympics, all these big ideas that really relied on the students being fairly independent and also being very quick to get to the task in hand. So they had to respond to my countdown, they had to listen, they had to go off into their groups and collaborate together. And that was all something that before schools got closed, my classes were getting pretty good at doing. They came back, though, after 3 months, super excited to do PE, which is amazing. They were absolutely buzzing to be active again, but they didn't want to stop talking when I wanted to tell them what to do. They didn't work that well together because they just hadn't interacted with each other for so long. Just really, really simple rules and procedures that we take for granted were not there. It was like starting the school year again, and you'd never go straight into some really complex project-based learning within PE within the first week of school. Yeah. And that's essentially what my plan was, because I just didn't even think. I didn't even think, well, they're not going to respond to a countdown or listen to my whistle straight away. That didn't cross my mind at all. So that was the biggest shock for me.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I know before we recorded, we were having that same discussion about even after a regular summer break, whether it's longer in the US, but here 6 weeks, going back, you see a noticeable difference in these things. But 3 months, and I think over here it's going to be pushing on at least 10 weeks, at least. It's a long time, and we think we need to sort of relearn and reprogram these basic expectations. And we need to view it, I would think, as like starting the school year off again in PE, even though the units might be different. My conflict here, if I was going back and doing this, is that when I'm starting off a school year, I often like to start off with a couple of lessons, a few weeks of some team building type activities, setting the culture, setting the tone of the class. But a lot of the activities I would generally do involve maybe working in closer proximity. And if there are still expectations of social distancing and what you can achieve, that's going to make it very tricky to do. Is that something that's still in place for you, sort of social distancing measures? And how have you combated these sorts of worries and thoughts going back? You've already mentioned there were face masks, but, you know, sharing equipment and things like that. How have you overcome and tried to negotiate that?
Yeah, it's a really hard one because, you know, once my first couple of lessons of athletics just failed, I kind of thought, okay, we need team building. And then, yeah, like you say, you look into team building stuff and it is students close together, students sharing equipment. And then that's another kind of barrier. So it turned into, I mean, we've got summer term now, athletics, striking and fielding, those kind of activities are ideal because it can be fairly independent and there's not that much contact, there's not that much shared equipment. In terms of getting the students to communicate and stuff again, it was a lot more coaching. So a student doing and a student coaching, which ideally I would like to have all my students active and doing to get them back into a routine. But you do have to kind of let yourself tell students, okay, you're not going to do for now. You're going to just stand at the side a bit and you're going to coach. You're going to coach your friend doing whatever skill, an athletic skill or learning how to strike a ball off a tee, whatever it is you're doing, and then swapping roles that way. So you've still got the communication. You've still got everybody engaged, even if they're not that physical all of the time. They're still engaged in the lesson. They're communicating with each other. They're starting to think about skills again. But they're keeping that distance. Yeah. Obviously, when it comes to primary, you can't get super advanced with the coaching. But I would say it has shocked me how good students can be at taking on roles, being a coach or being somebody who measures or times. I mean, tying in with the kind of cross-curricular stuff I was talking about earlier, I was lucky enough that one of my grade 3 classes in maths were revising measurements. So that was great. I could easily justify why one of my students was taking the measurements of a jump or the time of a run, because they can link that. They can link that into their classroom. They can take their own results back to the classroom and make graphs and whatnot. Yeah. But it is a really tough one, and you could really beat yourself up over it. But I think as teachers as well, we've got to go back and we've got to accept that PE for a while is probably not going to be back to normal. You are going to have to take things slower. You are going to have to split activities and not necessarily have all students active at the same time. Or if you are going to have all students active at the same time, it is going to have to be fairly individual and students working on a skill themselves. Yeah. So then it's you knowing your class, which would be better.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's having to think outside of the box. We're quite fortunate over here that we are entering, you know, the summer months now. And like yourself there saying, athletics being one area of work that you can get stuck into, or striking and fielding type activities. There's definitely scope for individual skill-based things, whether it be your throws, catches, rolls, which might link to your striking and fielding. Athletics, there's many things you could do which are more bespoke and individual if it's types of jumps and such, but it does depend on your space. And obviously the Great British weather in particular is not always the most reliable, so it could be the middle of June and it can be hammering down of rain outside, so then you're restricted to that small school hall again. And one thing which has crossed my mind, and I think many others are thinking the same, until we've got this exact guidance again, is that sharing of equipment. You know, being able to use the same beanbag or ball that someone else has used, or whether it's the bib, or whether it's the bat, or what that might be. Do you have somebody on the disinfectant running between, squirting the handle, and how that's going to practically work in an environment? And that's, I think, what a lot of people are struggling to maybe get their head around. When being approached and asked, have said that I think an orienteering type block or string of lessons might be useful at this time, taking out the team building, teams of four or five element of it, but lots of individual type map work and finding points on a map around school grounds that students are able to access themselves. And I know even throughout the year, people often ask for OEA and orienteering type resources. Well, now might be a good time to start devising and tweaking your own, because when you go back, that might be a good way to get the children active again and following routines and procedures, but actually working on an individual basis by themselves, which I think is more than achievable.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had teachers where I am doing orienteering, and they've gone right from grade 2, you know, right up to grade 10 and 11, and no matter the age, the students absolutely love it. And it gets them back into the routine. And it also gives you, you know, once you set up your orienteering and you've got things going, it also gives you a bit of time to kind of step back and watch how the students are interacting, looking to see if there's any students that aren't mixing back into the class the way you expected. Because this whole situation has been quite an ordeal for the students, and you know, they've been isolating away from the friends as well. So we need to remember that they're not necessarily going to be able to get straight back into the class dynamic that they had before.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. Now, just something that's popped into my head when you were mentioning earlier about your activity, which was the Jack and the Beanstalk one and the planting of the beans. I think you said that you did it today, even as we're speaking. Were children working in small groups there, and did that mean they had to share the tennis balls or balls they were using? Is that an issue, or is that something that we don't have to worry about?
Yeah, I had much smaller groups. I mean, two reasons: you want to restrict how many students are stood waiting for their turn, and you want to restrict who's touching the ball. I think it depends very much on, well, here it depends on the school's policies. But how we've done it is, I now, along with my teacher planner, carry a massive spray of hand sanitizer. And as the students arrive, they sanitize their hands. And whenever they go for a water break, they sanitize their hands. And then at the end of the lesson, they sanitize their hands. And equipment is regularly sprayed with alcohol or sanitizer by the cleaning team. That happens, I think, about three times throughout the day. I mean, we're lucky, we've got a very large and good cleaning team. But before the school said they would do that for us as a department, we were talking about if we needed to divide equipment up so that each teacher had so many cones and so many tennis balls and so many relay batons, so that only we use them, only our classes use them, so that we could really control who was touching them, making sure they'd sanitized before, making sure we were sanitizing between lessons. Yeah. So that could maybe be an option if you've only got a couple of specialists, they actually take ownership for their own equipment.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, and sort of splitting equipment up that way. It almost reminds me in a sense of the position we were in over here, perhaps you were the same, before lockdown started, where the classrooms in the schools I were in were all fitted with sanitizers, and when you enter, before you leave and so forth, you were expected to sanitize your hands, and that was being done. I suspect it will be continuing on return, and that's something you would continue as a procedure, certainly for the foreseeable future. Now, just so we can share maybe an actionable bit of advice or a game, I know you've mentioned that the Beanstalk game. For anybody listening, could you share with us maybe another activity or game or part of a lesson that has been really successful for you since returning a couple of weeks back, which age group it was for and what activity you did and how it was successful?
It's quite hard because I haven't had my little ones back. So most of my stuff's been for early years and they haven't come back yet. But for primary, grade three, so that would be year four back home in the UK, we managed to get into athletics, and we were doing... We're lucky enough to have long jump pits, and students were jumping widthways across because obviously it's safe to do so. And we had a jumper, a coach, and a measurer. And this is kind of less with the storytelling aspect, but it is very cross-curricular. So students were taking their results, and in class, like I say, they're doing measuring in class. So they were revising how to measure jumps. We also went off to do running, so they were revising how to measure time and kind of communicate a time correctly. And we were taking records, and after my lesson, which they loved, they just love running and jumping, and then, you know, they feel important if they are the measurer. We went back to the classroom, and as a class and with the help of the classroom teacher, we projected scores and started to look at who would have got bronze, silver or gold medals if we were in the Olympics. And I'd actually had some certificates printed, so we could actually award a boy and a girl bronze, silver, gold. So they loved having something to show for it. And at the same time, because they'd all been part of the measuring and the judging and the deciding, there weren't those arguments that you sometimes get of, no, I ran faster than him, I should get a gold. I don't think that was right. He didn't press stop when I passed the finish line, which you do get a lot. But because they were all part of the process, they couldn't argue it because they were the ones that took the measurements. They were the ones that decided on a bronze, silver, gold. And every kid loves a certificate. And what will happen next week when the teacher looks very basic at making graphs is she will actually use the students' results to make graphs. So again, they're going to be using their own results. I'm not a maths person. I would find graphs very boring. I'm sure there's students that may as well. But if you're using your own results, and you know you got a medal and you're using your result, that's quite an exciting thing. So it's maybe a bit more engaging for them. So again, that goes away from the theme part of it, but it stays with the cross-curricular learning that I'm trying to.
And I think most importantly, that activity itself, sort of the measuring and having roles, which, you know, is similar to what you might have in a sport ed or cooperative learning unit, is everyone's got a job to do. It's actually maintaining, to an extent, there some social distancing type procedures. So for anybody listening worried about that contact, everyone's got their own job and they don't need to be constantly close together. There's no physical contact as such. But then more importantly, building on that as well, it's got meaning for the students. There's a why behind they're doing it. They're taking that data, they're using that data, they're comparing that data. And that in turn is going to provide them with more motivation to want to do that and to succeed and carry on. And I think you just mentioned it was like equivalent to year three or year four over here. Perfect age group for that. But you can do something similar, I think, pretty much across the primary spectrum there, which would involve some athletics type activities and some measuring at more stages as well, which I think is great. And anybody listening, if you're going back, that would be a great place to start with some PE after you've maybe got your procedures back on track. I've mentioned some orienteering stuff, a bit of athletics stuff, and I think that would be the way forward with the time of the year that we're currently in. Now, before we finish up today, Rachel, one thing which I do want to ask you is on reflection of this very interesting year, let's say, this once-in-a-lifetime event almost, is there anything, or could you tell us about one thing that maybe you've learned over the 3 months which you're going to go back and have a newfound appreciation for, or maybe there's something you're going to do differently going forward now, having been through this experience?
I think it's, for me, it's sometimes thinking that you have to be a master, in these things, and a master in what you're doing in PE, or sticking to what you've always done in PE. I mean, if you look at the positive side of this, it has just turned education upside down, back to front, inside out. Nobody really knows the best thing to do. Nobody has all the answers. Within our PE department, we've got a varying range of staff, of which I'm one of the youngest, and sometimes feel like I should just kind of copy what's being done or listen to what's being said. But that, you know, experience and numbers of years in teaching doesn't matter right now. Everybody's in a completely new situation, where they don't necessarily know what they're doing, and it's kind of opened the door to experiment with new things. I don't think I would have asked classroom teachers as much what is going on in the classroom if this hadn't have happened. I'd have just gone along with my athletics unit the same as I taught it last year. Mm-hmm. But because I was kind of struggling for links and struggling of how I could do things when students can't necessarily all be active at the same time, I went to classroom teachers and kind of asked what theoretical stuff they were doing so I could bring that into the classroom. So I guess it's just not being a master in things and leaning on other people for support. But at the same time, if you are less experienced or younger than others who you're working with, don't think that your ideas are going to be anything less than theirs just because they've got more years behind them, because we're all on quite an equal playing field right now.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating piece of advice and way to look at it, because, you know, you can almost look at it as this hidden hierarchy within the educational setting. And I think there's many teachers and people, professionals out there, I've been in this boat sometimes in my career as well, where you almost bite your tongue for fear it's not your place that you could add anything of value or worth. And you said this is such an unprecedented time that nobody has ever experienced in the education system before at this point, that everybody is now on that level playing field, and you can always have something to add or offer and suggest. And now is a good time to be trying things out and experimenting, because quite frankly, this has not happened before, to find something new, find what works during these times. So that is a wonderful piece of advice, Rachel. We had a great chat today. And for those who are interested, how can they, again, stay in touch with you and continue following your journey, social media handles, website, and all of the like?
Yep. Website-wise, it's Once Upon a PE Lesson. So you can tell I was going for the story-based stuff there with Once Upon a. So give that a visit, and there's some more background. My email is also on there, so that's rachel@onceuponapelesson.com. Twitter, I am at rach06 1992. I think Twitter and the website and rachel@onceuponapelesson.com are the best ways to get in touch. Have a look at what I'm doing, drop me a message on Twitter or an email for whatever, really, if you're interested in what I'm doing, or if I know I'm kind of fast forwarded in the journey in terms of being back at school and having time to see how things have happened. So I have had a few teachers message me on Twitter or drop me an email about what's going on, and I'm more than happy to discuss and bounce a few ideas around. We're all here to help each other, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. So make sure you do that. Reach out to Rachel. There's lots of conversation, dialogue to be had. Follow her journey and see what she is doing. It's been a fascinating chat today. We've been around the houses a little bit, talking about story-based PE, cognitive biases, going back after a global pandemic and seeing how the landscape's changed. Hopefully there's something you've taken away from this PE umbrella community that you can implement, think about, mull over, agree with or disagree with. And that's the whole point of having these interviews. Head on over to peumbrella.com. There'll be links to this episode. You can link back to the first episode Rachel was on. You can listen again and again to try and get some of those knowledge bombs out of here that are relevant to you. All that's left for me to say for now, though, is keep on motivating, engaging and inspiring the students that you teach. And I will catch you all again very soon under the PE umbrella. Thank you again, Rachel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to the PE Umbrella podcast today. I genuinely hope you found some useful nuggets of information and insight from this episode. Remember, head on over to peumbrella.com for all of the show notes from past episodes to browse at your own leisure whenever you want. If you've got a spare minute, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate and review the show. It really would mean the world to me if you could do so. Thanks so much, and I'll see you again soon under the PE Umbrella.